guys and gals backstage are walking on eggshells. They're trepidatious. They're a little afraid to really go out on a limb because there is no other option. If they tick somebody off well, then, you know, there goes their career.
Well, don't piss anybody off. This is a different group of guys and gals. It's millennials. You know, they're not as ambitious, quite frankly.
You're embarrassing yourself, you geriatric fuck!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 411 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, November 29, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. I apologize in advance. I am sick as a dog this week, so if I sound like shit, that would be why. I actually had almost 102 fever overnight, but I took some Tylenol, and that seems to have broken that. But yeah, I couldn't remember the last time I actually missed a podcast, and one of our listeners, Adrian, told me, oh, you know, it was July of 2012 when you went to Vegas for your friend's bachelor party. And that didn't sound quite right to me, so I went back and I checked. And in fact, I did do a show. I did it a couple of days earlier. So I kind of backtracked from there. I was curious. And when you're sick, you have nothing better to do. And I checked, and the last time I missed an episode of The Sound Off, I mean, just missed it altogether, was way back in May of 2010. That was the week before Memorial Day. May of 2010, I have not missed a show since. I even did a show when I was all drugged up that November, when I went down with the mono, which I'm sure some of you remember. That was some of the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life. And that was funny coming on the air all doped up on pretty much everything. They had me hopped up on so much stuff, Vicodin, Oxy they gave me, prednisone. How did I do a show that week? I have to go back and listen to that again. Anyway, we already had one streak come to an end. We don't need another. I also have a lot to get off my very congested chest about the state of WWE, something that needs to be said, so this was not a show I really wanted to miss. But before we do that, one last bit of promotion here for our sale on ProWrestlingTees.com. We are in the final throes of the Black Friday sale. It comes to an end this Monday at 12 noon. So if you have not yet taken advantage of that, get on that. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. If you put the promo code Black Friday, all one word, in at checkout, you will get 20% off your order. And there are over 20 t-shirts to choose from. They ship all over the world. You can get them as a gift for somebody else. But if you've been waiting to get a shirt, if you've been on the fence, and you're looking for a little bit of money off, this is the time to get on that. And as I am recording this, there's about a little over 24 hours left in the sale. So again, Monday, November 30th at noon Eastern, it is over. So take advantage of that. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Also, Audible is still providing listeners of this podcast with a free 30-day trial and one free audiobook of your choosing. If you use the URL audibletrial.com/SolidMonster, sign up. You have over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can pick one free audiobook, and even if you cancel your trial in those initial 30 days, you get to keep the book no matter what. So take advantage of that. We're barreling toward the end of the year here, and I want to get a couple more signups. And last but not least, if you want to make a PayPal donation, those are always very much appreciated. You can do so on thesolidmonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname, and I want to say a big thank you to Deadpool James Herrera, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Masked Mayhem Javier Mitchell, who is celebrating a birthday tomorrow, so happy birthday, Javier, and Mountain Man Martin Bravo. Thank you very, very much for the donations. I appreciate that. I also want to just mention one thing about Stitcher Radio, because last week and the last couple of weeks, I think, there's been a lot of consternation about Stitcher. It's not working. How come the show's not up there? I just want to make one thing clear here. I don't have a separate upload of this show for Stitcher. So essentially, when I push it out to the feed, I push it out to iTunes, subsequently, it then hits Stitcher. So I don't, on my own, upload the show there. It kind of picks the show up when I push it out, and it goes to all these other places. So when the show doesn't show up on Stitcher, or it takes an extra 6 hours or 24 hours to pop up there, believe me, it's as frustrating for me as it is for you. I have no control over it. I don't know why that happens. I think it's bullshit. I think Stitcher has been garbage for the last few weeks. I know Wrestling Soup has had their own problems as well. It's not just our show, which makes me feel a little tiny bit better, I guess, but not much. So I don't know what's going on with Stitcher. You know, now I come on here and I say this, and Stitcher might be perfectly fine this week. Just know, if you're a Stitcher user going forward, if there are problems, it's not of our doing. I don't know why it's like that, but there's a reason why I push the show out to a lot of different services. So if Stitcher's not working, you can get it on iTunes. You can get it on direct download through Podbean. You can get it through the SoundOff app for Android, which is free. You could stream it there. TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom. I mean, you can get the show at least half a dozen different ways. So if Stitcher is not working, hope is not lost. I even uploaded the show to SoundCloud last week. I'm not going to do that every week. But just be aware, if it's not working, you can still listen to the podcast. You just got to work a little bit harder to figure out how you're going to get it. I know it's an inconvenience. I apologize. But I don't know what's going on. Like I said, Stitcher has been garbage for the last few weeks. And it's funny to me because they have the weekly Stitcher rankings. And, you know, we're always consistently in the top 5, the top 10 as far as sports shows. And a lot of times we'll crack the top 100 shows on all of Stitcher. And it puzzles me sometimes how that's even possible, because there are weeks where the show pushes very, very late. You know, eventually it hits Stitcher, but it takes sometimes days. And yet we still somehow manage to crack the top 10, which I think says a lot about you guys and how many people listen to the show. You can only imagine how well the show would be doing if it actually worked properly every single week. So anyway, I just wanted to give people an update on that, just to know that I feel your pain, and hopefully that will not be the case going forward. Last weekend was the WWE Survivor Series. For those of you who may have missed it, I did a post-show sound-off extra. That's up on our YouTube channel, over 25,000 views. If you missed it, head on up there. Very down and dirty, quick 21-minute review of the show. There really wasn't a whole hell of a lot to say. That show sucked. It was, in my opinion, certainly in terms of all the Survivor Series shows I've seen, the worst and most boring Survivor Series show of all time. And not just because of the finish. It just was not a good show. And I threw a poll up. It's funny to me, you know, when you have a really good show, and I study these things. It's almost like a behavioral study, a very unscientific behavioral study. When you throw a poll up, if there's like a really good show or a decent show, yeah, you might get some decent feedback to it, but you don't necessarily get a lot of feedback. When you have a show that is awful, I put this poll up on my Twitter page, one of these Insta polls, thumbs up, thumbs down. I think within 10 or 15 minutes, if that, of putting that poll up, I had 2,500 votes. It was crazy. We ended up with over 4,500 votes, 4,559 votes, 77% thumbs down, 23% thumbs up. I think that speaks volumes right there. You're all aware by now. Sheamus cashed in Money in the Bank. Roman Reigns won the championship. Sheamus beat him for it. He is the new WWE champion, their new corporate champion. And for those of you thinking, well, this was all part of a long-term plan and they're going to go somewhere with it, apparently they didn't even decide on Sheamus winning the title until a few hours before the show. So there's no point in trying to figure out what their plan may have been for Sheamus coming out of this, because there was no plan. Hopefully by now they have one. But that just tells you something right there. A few hours before the show, they still weren't sure who was going to walk away with that title. They still hadn't figured things out yet. Not only that, but Dave Meltzer noted on his website, the six matches that WWE had penciled in tentatively for the WrestleMania 32 card next year are out the window. Everything changed last Sunday. They blew up the card, or whatever card they had, I guess you could say, imploded. You know, that might be the better word for it. So, I don't know what's going on. long term. And you know, part of it was, you know, they were bitten by the injury bug and they thought they were going to have Rock, and now it looks like Rock's not going to be able to do the show. So part of it is just some bad luck, but you can't blame it all on bad luck. And so I don't know, you know, long term going forward, if they know much of anything that they're going to be doing. And as a fan, that's kind of troubling to hear. So that's the update on that. I don't really have anything more to say about Survivor Series. Go on YouTube and listen to the review. I said everything that needs to be said there. And if you didn't see the show, then you didn't miss much. Now, Cesaro, unfortunately, was also in the news. He is going to be out 4 to 6 months. He underwent rotator cuff surgery last Monday. He says he had the injury, for at least a couple of months, worked through it, didn't realize how serious it was. Then he finally had an MRI done, and that showed some torn tendons. Torn tendons cannot be fixed by just straight-up rehabilitation, so he had to have surgery. He is now recovering, and all the best to him. It sucks because it seemed as though he might have some momentum coming out of that match with Roman Reigns on Raw a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was the week before last, but, you know, how many times have we said that about Cesaro before? I mean, I don't even know that I honestly believe that. I just said it, but do I honestly believe that they were finally going to turn around and do something meaningful with the guy? Probably not. Probably not. So hopefully he'll heal up, he'll come back, and he'll be fresher. And if they're still thin, you know, roster-wise, maybe they'll have no choice but to do something with him. The other piece of news here, very sad, WWE fired my karaoke buddy, Brad Maddox, on Thanksgiving Eve, no less. They put a statement up on WWE.com. WWE has come to terms on the release of Brad Maddox as of Wednesday, November 25th. WWE wishes Maddox the best in all of his future endeavors. End quote. This was not something that he asked for. He apparently used the phrase cocky pricks during a pre-match promo at the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. A dark match, mind you, against R-Truth. Wasn't like it was live TV. Maybe they thought he was actually referring to the creative geniuses behind the scenes and not his opponent. I don't know. But they were very upset with the language, and so they fired him. They didn't suspend him. They didn't reprimand him. Nope, they fired him, which tells me they were just looking for a reason to get rid of the guy. It's not like they've done much with him. And the fact that they did it on Thanksgiving Eve just makes it that much shittier. He even posted a tweet a couple days later after one of the football games. I forgot what team he was rooting for, but they must have won. And he was like, oh, thanks to whatever team, I needed that. Like, you felt bad for the guy. You're heading into the Thanksgiving holiday, and for something like that, you're going to fire him? I mean, look, they haven't been doing anything with him. I can't necessarily blame WWE for wanting to, you know, cut the fat. But to do it for that reason and to do it when they did it, that was just really shitty. You know, it's good to know that cocky pricks get you fired, but using a dead kid who died of an overdose as a way to put heat on a match, that's A-OK. That's A-OK. What a weird place that is. But, yeah, I mean, as far as his career, there really isn't much to say. I mean, he was there for a number of years. He had a good look. They used him at one point as the Raw general manager. He's just a weird guy. Even when I met him, you know, over Mania weekend earlier this year at that karaoke place, and he was there by himself. He was just sitting there, and it was just weird, you know? I mean, nice guy, but I think there was something there that they could have done more with. I mean, you could say that about a lot of guys on that roster. You know, there's something there, and they should be doing more with them, but they never do. And I will say this. His last appearance was getting tombstoned on The Tonight Show by The Undertaker. I guess there are worse ways to go out. This week's Raw review is brought to you by Seamus Irish Lager. After a hard day at the office, have yourself an ice-cold Seamus. Goes down smooth, just like the ratings for Raw. Monday Night Raw was live from Nashville, Tennessee last Monday. 2.16 rating for Raw. Under 3 million viewers for the first time in many, many years. 2.95 million, which is 200,000 viewers lower than the previous non-holiday low rating dating back to 1997, when Raw was getting its ass kicked every week by Nitro. They did under 3 million viewers for each of the final 2 hours. And this is the night coming off a big pay-per-view. Yeah, Survivor Series may not be as big as it used to be, but it's still one of the bigger shows. They had this big tournament. They crowned a new champion. Yeah, normally you see a bump after something like that. And so surely it must have been the big football game, right? Or ISIS. You know, these people weren't even in the building, but they were too afraid maybe their TV might blow itself up. Okay, suicide by Sony. Or maybe it was Obama. It's always Obama's fault, right? Here's the thing about making excuses, especially the football excuse. The ratings are down in part due to football. They are. That is at least part of the reason. We go through this every single year. And they should go back up a little bit once football ends and we get closer to WrestleMania season. That is the usual pattern. But NoDQ.com put up this great little nugget of information. Last year's post-Survivor Series Raw show did 4.25 million viewers. This year, 2.95. Where did those million-plus viewers disappear to? Football was around last year. So were DVRs. So what happened? Now, that show did have Sting. In fact, the opening segment with Sting last year did about 5 million viewers. But what does that say about their success in creating new, genuine stars, like big stars? Doesn't speak very well to that when you need to rely on guys like Sting to get your numbers up. And I think we've now reached a point where most of those big names, even they don't matter anymore. We've had Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, even Brock Lesnar, all on Raw, and it doesn't seem to make as much of a difference anymore. You know, those were the bullets they always had in the gun that they could fire, and now they have the same bullets, but the gun jammed, and they can't seem to unjam it. And I understand, you know, they've been decimated by injuries. The list is very long. Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, who may be out now for over a year, Sting, Cesaro, even Lana got hurt right in the middle of her storyline with Rusev. Rusev was also out hurt, but now he's back. Nikki Bella's out with an injury. John Cena's been out, not with an injury because the guy's a fucking android cyborg and doesn't get hurt, but he's been away filming his reality show. Brock Lesnar, he's on a part-time deal, probably won't be back on TV until January. So they are at a handicap right now, absolutely. But they did this to themselves. How many chances have they had? How many chances to try to create a new star? I don't know if it would have worked or not, but I go back to a year ago. Dolph Ziggler. They had a chance coming off that Survivor Series show. And they blew it. I can't even say they blew it because that would imply they tried. And it didn't work. I don't think they even tried. And Dolph's one of the few guys that isn't out injured right now, but he may as well be, because he's deader than dead right now. The guy is mid-card for life. They did that to their entire roster, not named Reigns or Cena. They're all middle-of-the-card guys. Now, when the herd thins out a bit, which it has, that's when you really notice how bad it is. And they can call up a bunch of NXT guys if they want to, but what'll end up happening to them is the same thing that happens to a lot of the NXT people they call up. Some of them will make it, most of them will not. So now they have no choice but to shoehorn the mid-card for life crew into the main event picture, like Sheamus, like Rusev, like Wade Barrett. All very talented guys. Barrett in particular, he was another one. 4 or 5 years ago, seemed to be on the way up. Had the big program with John Cena, which is another common thread between some of these guys. Rusev is another one. They have that big feud with John Cena, and it seems to all go downhill from there. But Barrett, you know, very talented. He's got the size. He's got the legit fighting background. And they turned him into a joke. I just watched him and Sheamus, your new champion, on Table for Three on the network a few weeks ago. Openly mocking how awful their runs were as King of the Ring. Sheamus at least has some distance from his King of the Ring run. That was 5 years ago. But it wasn't that long ago that Barrett won the crown. It may have been this year. I don't even remember. It wasn't that long ago. And Barrett then, after winning, proceeded to lose every single match they put him in. Now we're supposed to take the guy seriously? It's like, you know, Vince McMahon must have seen Men in Black the first time that Tommy Lee Jones pulled out that little memory eraser thingy. And Vince was like, oh, I gotta get me one of those. And he's been using it on the audience ever since, hoping that we'll just forget every stupid fucking decision they've ever made. Just wipe our memories clean like it never happened. Wrestling fans have some pretty long memories. If somebody botched a spot in a Raw match in 2004, they will never let that person live it down, okay? We don't forget. And really, as a television show, what an insult. What an insult it is to your audience to think that you can just pretend certain things never happened. The guys weren't treated a certain way, and then when you try to elevate them, you get upset with the fans for not accepting them. I can't imagine why the fans just won't embrace this guy. Because he's a fucking loser. That's why. Joey Numbers from Wrestling Soup posted this great diatribe on our Facebook page many days ago. And one of the things that he said rang so true to me. He said, instead of respect for their audience, WWE has disdain. And it's so true. I don't doubt that there are people behind the scenes in that company who do legitimately hate their audience or laugh at them and mock them. But even the ones who don't hate their audience, they disrespect them when they do stuff like that. It all boils down to this. Are you giving the fans what they want? Are you giving them an entertaining show? And if the answer is no, which the numbers would seem to indicate, what can we be doing differently? They don't really seem to care. As long as they're still making money, they don't care. And that's the message I think I want people to understand here. They are a business. And I understand that. You're in business to make money. But don't lie and pretend that you care. Don't send me a fan council survey in my inbox every month asking my opinion on which matches I want to see and which superstars I'd like to see more of when I've been taking these things for 6 months now and absolutely nothing is any different. In fact, the only questions I've ever answered in those surveys that seemed like they were genuinely looking for feedback were about fucking Rolaids and Pepto-Bismol. It was about which sponsors you'd like to see and which products you'd be most likely to buy. That's all they care about. Remember when I joked about the Tums and the Rolaids stuff here a few months ago when I was taking these surveys? Lo and behold, we now have tons and tons of Rolaids commercials. After you watch Survivor Series and it gives you the runs, take Rolaids for your upset stomach, or take Pepto-Bismol to plug up your hole. They ought to get Lunesta or Ambien to sponsor these shows because they're putting people to sleep. Maybe they'd be able to stay awake if you told them to take one of those. They have their contract with USA Network. USA is not canceling Raw. I've gotten a lot of questions about that. How far down do the numbers have to go? It's not going to go down far enough to make that much of a difference. USA is not canceling Raw. As long as Raw does numbers higher than their other shows, they need wrestling. They need wrestling to stay in the top 10 cable rankings every week. Without Raw, they'd probably drop off the list. And that's very important to them. They want to stay competitive with ESPN and all these other networks. So Raw isn't going anywhere. Even if that third hour is killing the show, and it's not the only thing, but it's one of the big things I think that is killing the show, it doesn't matter because they make a boatload of money on that third hour. And by God, they want their money. They also want your money. And they don't want you to tell them how to get it because they already know how to get it. They think they're smarter than you are. They know everything and you know nothing. They don't care about your tweets. When you tweet how pissed off you are, they trend, which they like. Hey, we're trending. Right? Non-wrestling fans don't know why they're trending. They just see the WWE is trending. Raw is trending. So that won't work. They want your money. They want you to buy the network, which you will, because all the shit that you actually want to see is on the network. They just added a new section of old Saturday night shows from the TBS era back in the 80s. Table for Three, great stuff. NXT, great stuff. Hey, watch the Monday Night Wars when we actually tried. All of that stuff is on the network, so they have your $9.99. They haven't quite figured out how to convert all those 3 million people watching Raw to buy the network. If they had 3 million subscribers, they'd be on Easy Street. They haven't quite figured that out yet. but they're working on it. They want you to buy t-shirts. Lots and lots of t-shirts. Which, if you have a favorite wrestler, you want to buy them, right? Because you want to support your favorite wrestler. What kind of monster are you if you don't support your favorite wrestler? They have to feed their family, don't they? Yes, but that's also feeding WWE's fat face. So what do? Do you not support Kevin Owens and buy one of his 857 new shirts? The new Owen Hart DVD. It's due out next week. It's Owen Hart. Who doesn't love Owen Hart? You'll buy the DVD, and who gets the money? What do you think? It's going to charity? Yes, it's called the Church of McMahon. That's where the money is going. Same thing with the new NXT DVD that they're releasing soon. We just found out that they're putting a dark match on there with CM Punk and Seth Rollins against Cassius Ohno and Antonio Cesaro. The Kings of Wrestling, reunited. It's pretty cool, right? I mean, that's every indie wrestling fan's fucking wet dream. I've got to buy that DVD. Well, that's even more money in WWE's pockets. That's all they care about. Road Dogg has been tweeting people all week. I don't even know why he bothers. He's been tweeting people all week long defending the product, and I respect Road Dogg, but he's not going to speak out of turn because he knows who his master is. He's going to be a good little soldier. I don't know why people are even getting on Road Dogg's case. What do you expect him to say? But I thought he summed up their attitude perfectly in that company, and I don't even know if he intended to do this, but he summed up their attitude perfectly in this one tweet. He said, "The company has never been more profitable. Business is booming." Now, I don't know that I would have used the word booming, but it's true. They make more money now than they ever did before. The company is as big now, bigger than they've ever been before. They have so many things to sell now that they didn't back when their product was actually on fire. They can get away with it. But it's that attitude of, we're still making money hand over fist, and so therefore everything is just peachy, and you don't know what you're talking about. You're all so negative. Why can't you just be happy? It's like paying a prostitute to give you blue balls. I've never paid for a prostitute before, nor would I. You know, Charlie Sheen's probably infected all of them anyway. But the thought of paying one for sex only to have them tease you and not deliver a payoff, you'd be pretty upset, wouldn't you? I know I would. Now, imagine going back to that same prostitute the very next week and paying for the same thing all over again, and then being upset about it. It is the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. We're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. It's because we're all fucking insane. I see a lot of people threatening to cancel their network subscriptions. They threaten and they threaten and they threaten, and very few ever do. That's not going to solve anything. I'd rather they stage a coup in that company and overthrow the old man. Or make him chairman emeritus and bring in some new blood and some new ideas. When the product gets really rough like this, I think back and I remind myself of things like the Shield against the Wyatt family, as proof that they can still get it right when they want to. Or the Rhodes brothers against the Shield at Battleground. These are things that have happened in the last 2-3 years. Not that long ago. But nothing is going to change. I saw Rob Naylor went on a Twitter tirade. He used to be a creative assistant to Dusty Rhodes down at NXT. Very well liked. And then they let him go. He went on this Twitter tirade, made a lot of great points about what's wrong with the product. Mick Foley. God bless Mick Foley. He's been on again, off again with WWE for so many years. I guess now he's off again probably after that blog he posted on his Facebook page. I guess we won't be seeing Santa Foley on TV this year. He says he's this close to becoming an ex-WWE fan. That's how disgusted he is with how certain guys are treated on the main roster. He's tired of seeing guys that he has rooted for never get past a certain level, no matter how strongly the crowd reacts to them. He's tired of NXT stars getting their supposed big break on the main roster only to be treated, in his word, like a joke. He said he and his son traveled 12 hours to Orlando to watch Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch wrestle a takeover in one of the greatest women's matches he's ever seen, only to watch them get 4 minutes on Raw last Monday. These are people, whether it's Rob Naylor, Mick Foley, whoever, they have been on the inside. They know how it goes, and they're seeing the exact same things that the fans are, but it doesn't matter. They couldn't change things when they were there, and they're not going to change things from their couch at home. And until there's some kind of change at the very top, we're not going to see any change either. We're not going to be able to do anything. Doesn't mean we can't vent, but let's not delude ourselves into thinking that any of this is going to make any difference at all, because it won't. Raw Instapoll, I put up on Twitter after the show last week, 1,300 plus votes, 81% thumbs down, 19% thumbs up. People flat out hated this show. I was shocked. I didn't think it was that bad. You know, not 81 to 19 bad. I wouldn't give it a thumbs up, but yeah, this poll was just a shellacking here. The Authority came out first, because of course they did. They brought out Sheamus. The fans chanted, "You look stupid," at the new WWE champion. He held up the title and said, "Who looks stupid now?" Roman Reigns came out smiling. He came out with a smile on his face after getting screwed the night before, tears streaming down his face. They really do want him to be the next John Cena. That much is very much apparent. There were hardly any boos for him on this show, so that's a good sign. For one night at least, they got what they wanted. We have a champion that only got the title because they want the babyface to actually get cheered. And Sheamus, like many before him, came off as a bit player here in this segment when Triple H went beak to nose with Roman Reigns in a very long stare down. It was all about Reigns and Triple H. That's the real match I guess they're building to. Maybe for Mania, who knows? Now that Triple H has no opponent. But Sheamus was just kind of in the background here. Don't delude yourself into thinking that Triple H isn't still the top heel on this show, because he is. Don't let that pesky belt fool you. Reigns wanted his rematch. Triple H said it'll take place at the TLC pay-per-view in a tables, ladders, and chairs match. Rusev returned. He gave Reigns a savate kick, followed by a brogue from Sheamus. Triple H made Reigns versus Rusev in the main event. I can't imagine why people tuned out for that. Harper and Rowan beat the Dudley Boys, and then the Wyatt family squashed them after the match and left them laying. Sasha Banks beat Becky Lynch in a 4-minute match, which Mick Foley complained about. Beat her. Here's what I took more of an issue with. She beat her with a distraction roll-up. Sasha Banks now, just like everybody else on the show. Becky went after Naomi. Naomi was taunting her outside the ring, and that's when Sasha rolled her up for the pin. Sasha Banks, who was the hottest thing in wrestling just a couple of months ago, like I said, now, just like everybody else on this show. We then got a graphic hyping up the New Day's first anniversary country music jamboree and tag team championship open challenge. This was the highlight of the show. It went on for probably a little too long, but goddamn, where would this show be without the New Day? Answer me that. I used to say that about The Shield, right? Where would Raw be without The Shield having those awesome six-man tags every single week? Well, where would Raw be without the New Day? In a pretty bad place. And it's already in a bad place. It would be in a worse place. Somebody emailed me something they saw on Reddit. I think it was from Reddit. That's what he said anyway, about how the New Day should film themselves going to Seth Rollins' house to cheer him up while he rehabs from his injury. Kind of like what Mankind did back in the day with Vince McMahon when he was in the hospital after Undertaker and Kane shattered his ankle. Yeah, Rollins was reluctant friends with New Day, right? How fun would those skits be? I think that would be pretty cool. Far too creative, though. Won't ever happen. So the New Day came out. They were stealing Chavo Guerrero's old gimmick here. They were riding Pepe the Wooden Stick Horse. Big E almost pulled off a John McClane. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. But he got cut off before, I guess, they were fired. They fired Brad Maddox for saying cocky pricks in a dark promo. Imagine what the punishment would be for Big E on live TV if he dropped an F-bomb. The only person who can get away with that is The Rock. Kofi Kingston said country music sucks, which it does. Actually, I take that back. Garth Brooks. I will make an exception for Garth Brooks. Otherwise, country music sucks. He said it's all about losing their dogs and losing their girlfriends and tractors and such. And then he said, "No, seriously, guys, this is not my character speaking. Country music sucks." And whatever. Xavier played the sad trombone during this. Then came the challenge, the open challenge, which was kind of the whole point of this. And actually was the worst part of this whole segment once all the other teams came out. Out came the Lucha Dragons. Hunico Kara spoke English for the first time, at least on this show. And as somebody on Twitter pointed out, Sin Cara sounded like Kenny from South Park with that mask on, which he did. The Usos came out next, because, yeah, this is so much better than my Roman Empire idea. They proposed a three-way match, at which point Xavier promptly canceled the open challenge, and they all attacked the New Day. And before the other teams came out and ruined it, I thought this was great. Then we had Mark Henry and Neville. This match was a mistake from the word go. First of all, Mark Henry is clearly doing the honors on his way out. I think that much is obvious. He is going to be retiring, I think, just after WrestleMania, or at WrestleMania. Vince McMahon talked him into another three-year contract last time. He says this time he will not allow Vince to talk him out of this. So Mark Henry is kind of winding down the clock here. And for all the talk of The Undertaker and his 25th anniversary, I know Henry wasn't as big of a star as The Undertaker was, didn't have as many great matches, but I hope he gets some respect on the way out, too. I hope they celebrate Mark Henry in some way. I had this guy written off about 9-10 years ago, after all the injuries and all the start-and-stop pushes, but that Hall of Pain gimmick, he just struck gold with it. It was just fantastic. He completely reinvented himself. Randy Orton, to his credit, put Mark Henry over clean, I think in back-to-back pay-per-view matches for the world title. He got a nice little run that also got cut short by injury, but that Hall of Pain run and that retirement promo with John Cena and the salmon-colored jacket, those were the highlights of his career, and I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame for that alone. So he threw Neville around like a rag doll early in the match, and then he acted like he didn't want to hurt the little guy. I don't want to hurt the little fella. This from a guy who's been jobbing out left and right every single week. This is exactly what Neville needed, right? To be thrown around like a piece of garbage by Mark Henry, who now is having doubt about how badly he's kicking this guy's ass. So Neville ends up hitting the red arrow on Mark Henry, and Mark Henry, technically, even if this was not intended, became the very first person on Raw to ever kick out of the red arrow. Now, I think what was supposed to happen was that Henry was going to kick out right after the three count, kind of like the way Hogan did with Warrior at WrestleMania 6 because he just couldn't help himself. Instead, Mark Henry kicked out before the three count. They didn't play Neville's music right away. There was some confusion. Finally, they played his music and they announced him as the winner. After the match, Mark Henry shook his head and told him, "One day, you're going to be good. One day." He's not good now, but one day, you'll be good. It's worth mentioning that Neville was the only babyface eliminated in his Survivor Series match the night before. He was eliminated by Miz, no less, which is career suicide. But he basically got his win back here on this show. So, even Steven strikes again. Titus O'Neil took a wrong turn backstage, ended up in Stardust's Galaxy dressing room. I think I took a wrong turn when I was flipping through the channels and landed on USA. That's what I was thinking right about now. Zeb Coulter and Alberto Del Rio came out to put the nail in the coffin of this Mex-America storyline. This thing was doomed to fail from the start. I don't even know why these two were put together. Somewhere in here, as he was rattling off, Zeb was, the names of various social media services, he mentioned Grindr. The thought of Zeb Coulter surfing for men on Grindr is something that not even Bleach could wipe away from my brain. Jack Swagger came out. He cut a pretty decent little promo here. Del Rio said, "Shut up, you stupid Dominican." Actually, that sounded more like Rusev. I apologize. But he basically said, "Shut up, you stupid American." Great comeback, by the way. Swagger came down to confront Del Rio, and Del Rio bailed. So that is your next feud for the U.S. title. Heath Slater came out later on in the show. He broke a guitar over Ryback's back. Ryback no-sold it, laid him out with the shell shock. Jack Swagger and Heath Slater on the same show. As if you couldn't already tell how thin their roster is right now. Charlotte and Paige wrestled for 15 minutes after getting 14 minutes the night before. Now, I'm all for more time for the Divas, but why does Sasha and Becky get 4 minutes? I would have taken 5 minutes from this and given it to them. They had a pretty good little match. I enjoyed it more than their Survivor Series match. Paige is morphing into a lizard woman based on how many times she sticks her tongue out during her matches. This match went 15 minutes and they gave us a double countout for a finish, which is just complete bullshit. And the crowd booed. Once again, Paige put Charlotte in the PTO on top of the announce table because I don't know why. Tyler Breeze and Kevin Owens against Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose. No entrances for any of them. Tyler Breeze's entrance is the best part of his whole act, and now they've cut that part out. So this guy's already doomed. And he lost. Forget the entrance. He fucking lost. Got pinned with dirty deeds. Main event was Roman Reigns against Rusev, with Sheamus on the outside. This went almost 20 minutes. Thankfully, Rusev is really good. Roman Reigns is also good. So they had a nice match. Drive-by by Reigns on the outside to Rusev. King Barrett attacked Reigns from behind with the bullhammer for the DQ. I am intrigued by the idea of an international stable. But it's too bad these guys were beaten like drums week after week, month after month for so long, because this is not a main event feud. Barrett grabbed the chair, which Reigns took away. He started hitting Rusev with it. He hit Sheamus in the back with it. That's how they went off the air, with Roman Reigns standing tall and the tease of a new European Union. And again, not a bad idea, but this just screams mid-card to me. This is not a main event faction. It could have been. Different time and place, it could have been. But I'm not buying it.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT star, and I use that term loosely because when was the last time we saw him on TV? Solomon Crowe is gone from WWE. He requested and received his release. No word on why. The guy was a bust. You know, he just never connected the way a lot of people thought he would. He had great success on the indie scene as Sami Callihan before he came over. He was in CZW, he was in Evolve, PWG, but it just never worked in NXT. I don't know exactly why, but it just never worked out. He went through a couple of gimmick changes. I never saw anything special out of the guy, which is to say nothing about his ability. Actually, you know what? Scratch that. It has to say something about his ability on some level, because if he had that connection with the crowd or something to his personality that really stood out to people, if he was really that good, then he would have had more success. He would have found a way to make it work. And so the fact that he didn't, you know, in a lot of ways that is on him. People are assuming he'll end up back on the indies, and he very well might, but we still don't know why he asked for his release. I mean, who knows? Maybe he wants to take a break from wrestling. I'd imagine we'll know soon enough. There's supposedly no heat on either side, so who's to say he won't even be back in WWE one day? So NXT this week opens with one of the most horrifying images I've ever seen on this show, which is Michael Cole. Michael Cole has taken over in William Regal's absence. He is recovering from neck surgery, and he is in the ring for the contract signing with Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. And let me also mention this. There was a show-long storyline that played out over the course of the hour where WWE Corporate was clearly trying to make sure Eva Marie won the women's title from Bayley. Cole said Regal tried to cancel the match between Bayley and Eva Marie. I guess it was made against his wishes, but he was overruled by WWE Corporate. I thought this storyline was fantastic. I'm going to talk more about that later. So the contract signing. Balor comes out, he says he wants Joe to look him in the eye when he comes out to the ring. Joe walks out, never once makes eye contact with Finn, just stares down at the floor, enters the ring, signs the contract, and immediately walks out. Best contract signing ever. total disrespect for the champion here. So Finn Balor, you know, signs the contract. He heads to the back. Joe comes back out, lays him out from behind, throws him back into the ring. Finn fought back, but Joe got him in the coquina clutch. Finn passed out. He sold this by slobbering all over himself. This reminded me of when Mankind first debuted, all the job guys he would wrestle. When he would put the mandible claw on them, they would spit up all over themselves. It was disgusting. So this was good. This was good. This put more heat on the match at TakeOver between the two of them. Dash and Dawson against the Vaudevillains in a rematch for the NXT Tag Team titles. Match really picked up, I thought, at the end. A lot of fun near falls. Dash Wilder blind tagged himself in, unbeknownst to Aiden English, who they laid out with the Shatter Machine, which is their flapjack into the Codebreaker, so they win. Eva Marie backstage in William Regal's office. He's not there, so he doesn't need it, she says. She said the fans want to see a real woman as the NXT champion. They show all of the gifts in the background that fans have supposedly been sending to her. She also introduced Nia Jax as her new friend. So, you know, you're watching this and you realize they're really stacking the deck even more against Bayley for the main event. We had Asuka and Dana Brooke supposed to have a match. They never did have their match. Dana Brooke, who was apparently dating Dolph Ziggler. They spent their Thanksgiving together, so good for them. While Dana was cutting a promo in the aisleway, Emma attacked Asuka from behind in the ring. She put her in the Emma lock. Emma and Asuka then, or Emma and Dana, I should say, then fled. Asuka got back to her feet. She cracked a smile. I hope Emma has her organ donor card filled out. Backstage, Bayley said Eva Marie may be WWE's corporate favorite, but the difference between them is that Bayley is a wrestler. Uh-oh. Surprised I didn't use the 7-second delay for that one. We got a Sami Zayn return video package, but no date. I was kind of bummed when I saw this, only because I was hoping they'd keep his return a secret and debut him at the Royal Rumble to get his revenge on Kevin Owens. I mean, I guess they still can. Yeah, he could still be a Rumble surprise. Apollo Crews beat former TNA star Jesse Sorensen, held him up with a vertical suplex for about 20 seconds before dropping him. Crews won with the move where he tosses the guy up into the air, catches him coming down with a sit-out powerbomb. He accepted Baron Corbin's challenge to a match at TakeOver. Corbin, backstage, said Crews would end up being the answer to a trivia question after he beats him. Next week, it's going to be Samoa Joe one-on-one against Tommaso Ciampa. So, to sell the corporate angle even more, it's main event time. They send WWE referee Charles Robinson, Lil Nate, out there as the second referee to make sure that there is no controversy in this women's championship match between Eva Marie and Bayley. They did everything in their power to make you believe that Eva Marie was walking out with that title. They did a tremendous job with the way they handled this. Eva came out, nuclear heat from the crowd. These people hate her guts. She had Nia Jax in her corner. The match itself was what you would have expected. Bayley did everything in her power to make it decent. I thought she did a good job, all things considered. Eva is absolutely terrible. She is an absolutely terrible professional wrestler. She didn't have really much to do here. Bayley did most of the work, so it was fine. To me, Eva still looks lost. She still looks lost. She still looks like she's moving in slow motion. There were quite a few camera edits during this match as well, so I can only imagine what this match must have looked like in the building, unedited. Bayley hit the belly-to-belly suplex, got a near fall when Nia Jax yanked the referee out of the ring. She yanked this fucker so hard, he landed on the steel grate, face-first on the ramp. So that was the cue for Charles Robinson to get into the ring and take over. Meanwhile, Nia hit Bayley with a giant headbutt that the referee did not see. Eva went for the pin, only got a 2 count. And you could tell the look on Charles Robinson's face. He was there for one reason and one reason only, and that was to make sure Eva left with the title. Crowd heat for this was just off the charts. They wrestled some more. Bayley went to charge at Eva in the corner, but Robinson jumped in her way to stop her, saying that Eva was in the ropes. Eva took the advantage back. She nailed the sliced bread. And this is where people thought, oh shit, that's it. It's over. But Bayley kicked out, and everybody cheered. Eva went for the sliced bread again. Bayley shoved her into Charles Robinson. Charles Robinson took a huge bump out to the floor. You know, Eva is all of what, 95 pounds, 85 of which is in her chest? But this guy, the way he went flying, you would think he was Earl Hebner getting shoulder checked by the British Bulldog in that Beware of Dog match against Shawn Michaels. For those of you who want to see the who want to see one of the most brutal ref bumps of all time, it's on the network toward the end of their match. Nia Jax interfered again, but Bayley was able to yank her down off the apron, so she was laid out. Bayley then hit a super belly to Bayley off the middle rope and got the three count. I believe when the I think the original NXT referee ran back into count. You know what this reminded me of, and I got to give a shout out to Miguel for bringing this up because I thought the comparison was spot on, and I felt the same way when it was over. This reminded me of the Steve Austin Dude Love match from Over the Edge that I had on my favorite matches countdown. It was a similar deal. You know, you stack the deck against the babyface champion. Corporate wants the other guy to win. Eva Marie looks nothing like Mick Foley, thank God, but she's the chosen one, just like he was at the time. They, you know, in that match, they made Briscoe the timekeeper. They made Patterson the ring announcer. Vince is out there as the referee in a shirt three sizes too small. You have a hot crowd hanging on every near fall. But in the end, the babyface succeeds and retains their title. This was the exact same blueprint. And it worked. I love this. This was so much fun to watch. I applaud them for making this work, for getting me invested in an Eva Marie match. And she really is terrible. For the level of experience that she has at this point, for her to be as bad as she still is amazing to me. But with all the ref bumps and all the interference, they did a good job of covering that up. There were two fans in the front row during this match, and it was the perfect juxtaposition of how to protest an Eva Marie match. On the left, you had the sophisticated way to protest by reading a book during her match. This guy was reading a book. Meanwhile, directly beside him was another fan who just sat there flashing his middle finger at her the entire time. That's the not-so-sophisticated way to protest an Eva Marie match. Now, someone sent me a link to a ridiculous article that somebody wrote on this website called Sports Kings. They were so offended by the guy reading a book during the match. They had to write a whole article about it. They thought it was so disrespectful. He didn't say anything about the guy holding up his middle finger. No, just the guy quietly reading a book. He called it an example of what is wrong with wrestling fans. I know, right? The guy was reading a book. I mean, come on, wrestling fans don't read books, right? I don't know what this guy's trying to... Is that what he's trying to say? Because I don't know what he's trying to say here. That's what's wrong with wrestling fans, really? The guy reading a fucking book? He actually said, to cause a distraction to other fans who are watching the match is a good sign that you are taking it too far. Yes, apparently this man silently reading a book at ringside was so much of a distraction, he ruined the match for everyone else. I thought it was perfectly fine. If that's how he chooses to protest her matches, then I applaud him. I see nothing wrong with it. But it got me wondering, what else must offend this guy? So I went looking at some of his other work, and I didn't have to look very far before I found this headline. This is the headline of his other article. NXT Diva receives shockingly disrespectful offer on Twitter. This was about Brazzers tweeting Eva Marie and telling her, when this whole wrestling thing blows up in your face, give us a call. All right, I would say that's a tad bit more disrespectful than some guy sitting in the front row reading a book. But still pretty funny nonetheless. Not to this guy. Oh no. And then he says, now keep in mind, I don't find the offer disrespectful. That's what he says in the article. I don't find the offer disrespectful. Which completely contradicts his own headline. He says, I find the fact that they are predicting her failure in WWE to be disrespectful. Beyond that, he says, I find the fact that Brazzers apparently thinks that Mrs. Marie will have no other career choice to be disrespectful as well. It's not funny, and it shouldn't be taken as such. This is an attack against a woman that is trying to live out her dream. Brazzers should see this as a wake-up call, oh yeah, that'll happen, and feel ashamed for basically bullying Mrs. Marie on Twitter. Now, you know for a fact, this guy probably wallpapered his apartment with pictures of Eva Marie and has Total Divas running on a loop on his TV. He sounds a tad bit obsessed. He doesn't find the actual Brazzers offer offensive for her to do porn. No, he finds the insinuation that she will fail as a pro wrestler to be offensive. Well, you know, I tell you what, he shouldn't be upset over what happened last week. He should be happy. She peaked in this match here against Bayley. This was her best match ever. It was the best she's ever looked, and probably will ever look. What's he so grumpy about? I was honestly shocked they didn't hold off on this match until the London special, but you know, looking at all the camera cuts, they probably didn't trust her out there doing a live match. She had a live match in Brooklyn, I think with Carmella, but it wasn't very good. After the match, Nia Jax laid out Bayley with two leg drops, so it would appear that she may be getting the next title shot in London at TakeOver. I still feel that title is ending up around Eva Marie's waist. Maybe they do a Hogan-Andre deal where Nia wins the title from Bayley and then she tries to sell it to Eva Marie. But either way, I sense this is not the end of Eva and that title. You know what the other thing was that I liked about this whole corporate angle? This ties in with an idea that was pitched on this podcast a few months ago. This was when there was talk of Ronda Rousey possibly being at WrestleMania. That's not happening now, but the gist of the idea was to use Ronda as a way to help introduce Bayley to the main roster for a match against Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania. You know, instead of doing Ronda Rousey against Stephanie, which was not going to happen, Dana White wouldn't let it happen anyway. At least it keeps Ronda involved, and it helps get a new top diva over, right? So it's a win-win situation. That was kind of the idea behind it. You know, Stephanie thinks Bayley is just a little girl who doesn't belong on Raw and SmackDown, and Bayley's just trying everything for months in advance, trying everything to convince her otherwise so she can make it to the main roster. And it ends up in a match between them, maybe with Ronda helping to train Bayley for a match against Stephanie, and Bayley beats her and earns herself a spot on the main roster. I don't expect that they're going to do that, but if WWE corporate is stacking the deck against Bayley, they've already planted the seeds for it. It would be so easy to do. And a pretty high-profile way, I would say, to introduce Bayley to the main roster. TNA. TNA's planned tour of India, which was to begin this weekend, and they made such a big deal out of this thing, was postponed. They sent an email out to all of the talent late on Thanksgiving Eve, informing them that the tour was off until sometime next year. They didn't say when. They're claiming it was due to, quote, logistical issues. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, there's a reason for that. Think back to Sound Off 405, back in October. Remember their hardcore Halloween tour that they had planned? They canceled that too, due to logistical issues. And I told you they were full of shit, because I had a person who works for Ticketmaster tell me that tickets were selling like shit. So here we are again with the dreaded logistical issues. This entire year for TNA has been one giant logistical issue. This time, they claim it's allegedly due to safety concerns. TNA has told the wrestlers that they're going to be paid regardless, but there were a lot of very angry wrestlers because they were ready to leave a couple of days later. They had their travel itineraries, and all of a sudden the tour is off, and now they had to scramble to find bookings for this weekend. Hopefully TNA will pay them. Who knows when that might be. In the meantime, they got to work. So they weren't very happy about that. ProWrestling.net, which is one of the more reliable websites typically, reports that there had been a rumor, and that's all it is right now, is a rumor, but there had been a rumor internally within the company prior to the cancellation. So this is before they even announced that the tour was off, that airline tickets ended up being a lot more expensive than they had expected because they waited so damn long to book everybody's flights. So who knows if that had anything to do with it. That almost sounds so TNA to me, I can totally believe it. They were supposed to tape the semifinals of their world title tournament in India. They were also going to do a one-night-only pay-per-view taping while over there. So I don't know what they're going to do now as far as the tournament is concerned. TNA has no more live events scheduled until their Pop TV debut on January 5th. It's amazing to me. How does this company stay in business? I ask myself that question sometimes, and I can't really come up with a suitable answer. This is one of those examples of how do they stay in business? How do they do it? It's just unbelievable to me. It's just such an embarrassment. Now, on Impact, Kurt Angle announced that TNA's upcoming UK tour would be his last, and he would be retiring from Impact Wrestling. He didn't outright say that he was retiring from pro wrestling, just from TNA. But he did say that if it had to be the end of his career, he couldn't think of a better place to do it than there in the UK. I can think of one better place. Kurt's actually said he thinks his TNA career was better than his WWE career, and his favorite match is one that he had with Bobby Lashley, I think, earlier this year, because it validated that he could still do at age 42 what he could do at 32, so it means a lot to him. No doubt, TNA gave this guy a second lease on life in wrestling at a time when that door had closed with WWE, so I'm sure he has a great deal of loyalty to TNA, a great deal of loyalty to Dixie Carter. I'm sure his checks were never late, you know, that kind of thing. I'm sure they treated him like gold. Somebody asked me on Twitter a few weeks ago to pitch a fun scenario for the Royal Rumble. It can involve anybody. And I said, how about this? You have Brock Lesnar in the Rumble match. He's cleaning house. In fact, it comes to a point where he empties the ring. And he is just waiting for the next entrant to come out. The clock hits zero, and all of a sudden, we hear Kurt Angle's theme music. Can you imagine how apeshit the place would go if that happened? And then you've got Lesnar and Angle face-to-face, alone in the ring. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. I mean, I don't see Kurt coming back full-time or anything, but I think one last run heading into WrestleMania at a time when they've got half their roster seemingly on the injured list, it sounds like a hell of an idea to me. And you let Brock and Kurt go at it for a couple of minutes until the next person comes out. You don't have to give too much away in case you want to do that match at WrestleMania. That would be a Royal Rumble moment right there. That's how I would book it. Unfortunately, TNA's UK tour doesn't start until January 29th. And the Royal Rumble is on January 24th. So there will be no Kurt Angle in the Royal Rumble. Unless they end up canceling that tour, too. You know, with TNA, you never know. It could very well happen. Ring of Honor had its final airing on Destination America before they moved to Comet TV. This was the show where Roderick Strong won the television title from Jay Lethal. This was taped many weeks ago. I heard great things about this match, and it delivered. I would not go as far as to say it was match of the year or anything like this. I've seen much better. In fact, on this TV show, I've seen better. But this was a really good match that it built. It started slow, and it built, and it built, and it built. A lot of near falls at the end. Jay Lethal hitting the lethal injection for a near fall. And Roddy hit a sick kick on Lethal that turned him inside out. Gave him a backbreaker, put him in the stronghold. I guess the story there is, you know, he didn't want to pin him. He could have pinned him. He wanted to make him tap out. And Lethal fought it as long as he could, and finally, he couldn't fight it anymore. He tapped out. The place went nuts. And so ends Jay Lethal's 567-day run as the Ring of Honor World Television Champion. He won that title in April of last year. So that was when Daniel Bryan won the WWE title at WrestleMania. That's how long this guy has held the TV title for. He is still the world champion. He is supposed to defend the title against AJ Styles at Final Battle. AJ Styles has a back injury. He was pulled from a New Japan tour. I don't know how serious it is, but he's got some big matches coming up. You know, like I said, AJ is supposed to challenge for the ROH title at their pay-per-view in a few weeks. He's got that big match coming up with Nakamura at Wrestle Kingdom. So hopefully AJ's injury is not that serious. But this TV title match was great. Find it if you can. And I'm very sad to see their run on Destination America come to an end. Hopefully it won't be too difficult for me to keep up with the show going forward. But I thought this was a strong way to to end their run on that network. Let's get into the mailbag questions here, because we have a ton of them that I have thrown together here. Please include your name and where you are from when you do submit a question to thesolomonster@gmail.com. Michael, from the Bronx, do you know what happened between Paul Heyman and Vince McMahon at the December 2 Dismember pay-per-view? I heard that Paul wanted to put the ECW title on CM Punk, but Vince wanted it on Bobby Lashley. What is the full story? Well, I mean, very simply, Heyman wanted to put the title on CM Punk. Vince wanted to put the title on Mr. Muscles. Heyman's idea was to actually have Punk choke out the Big Show at the very beginning of that Elimination Chamber match with the Anaconda Vice. Big Show supposedly was cool with the idea. He was on board. Vince wasn't. And so he nixed it. And it ended up being one of the worst pay-per-views ever in the history of mankind. They got into a shouting match on the plane ride home, and we didn't see Paul Heyman again for 6 years. So that's what happened. Khalif from Philadelphia. I was watching a promo package from the 1992 Royal Rumble that had WWF President Jack Tunney stating that the title was vacated and the winner of the Rumble would receive the championship. As I look back during the 80s and 90s, I never heard Vince McMahon himself give speeches about the situations in WWE until Macho Man's departure from the company. During the times of Jack Tunney, did anyone know Vince was the owner of WWE? Yeah, I mean, plenty of people knew. I think the casual fan watching the TV shows probably didn't know. But, people in the business knew, older fans knew. A lot of people didn't, because it was never acknowledged on TV. And so if that was your only frame of reference, you would have no way of knowing. I don't think it was until the steroid stuff in the early 90s, when Vince was all over the news, that people really figured it out. By the mid-90s, I mean, they started to acknowledge it in storylines, especially Shawn Michaels in 96 would make little comments here and there. Then Bret Hart would push him around, Undertaker would get screwed, and he would complain to Vince sitting at ringside. So by then, you know, the cat was out of the bag. Jay from Chicago, during one of the tournament matches at Survivor Series, JBL mentioned that Scott Hall, Arn Anderson, and Roddy Piper were never world champions. Do you think any of them had world champion appeal? Piper. Absolutely. Of the three, Piper, without a doubt. You could have easily put the title on him, you know, around 84, 85, at the height of his feud with Hogan. And he would have been the most hated champion of all time. You know, he already needed a police escort out of the garden. You know, can you imagine if he had the title? Ray from Fort Worth, Texas. I know Sid was promised the main event of WrestleMania prior to his signing in 1991. Obviously, this led to Hogan vs. Sid and Flair vs. Savage. Flair was granted his release in January of 1993. Should Vince have tried to get Flair to stay through WrestleMania 9 and job to Hogan on the way out? This would have kept Hogan away from the title and made that event more special. What do you think? That Sid thing has been a rumor for years. I don't know how true it is. It may be, but I don't know if it is or not. I also don't know how much Hogan vs. Flair would have meant without the title being on the line. And Hogan was getting that belt back anyway, so it's a moot point. The whole point of him coming back was to get the championship. Rich, from New Jersey, who's your pick as the real leader of WWE's new generation, Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels? Bret Hart. Keyword there being leader, not selfish prick. Mark from Somerset, England. During the Ministry of Darkness Corporation storyline, there were a couple of episodes where Ken Shamrock was pushed almost as a babyface. He rescued Stephanie McMahon from the basement on one Raw episode when Undertaker kidnapped her. He was also betrayed by Vince McMahon when he revealed himself as the higher power. Why didn't we get a Shamrock versus Vince feud? I thought we kind of did. I mean, wasn't there a Lion's Den match on Raw with Shamrock and Vince? I vaguely remember there being a Lion's Den match and somebody interfering. It might have been Steve Blackman. And the match never took place. So I think they kind of did do something or teased it. But I could be wrong. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Ross from Edmonton, Alberta. I got this question back in September, which doesn't even begin to tell the story of how far behind I am. I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can. He said, I read that The Undertaker was originally supposed to wrestle The Big Show at SummerSlam 2000. Is it true? And if so, why did the match not happen? Yes, they were supposed to do the match, but Big Show's weight was out of control, so they sent him down to OVW. I don't know if they sent him to a fat camp or not. I feel like they did. But they definitely sent him down to OVW, which, you know, to send a guy like that down to developmental, that's a message right there. They were sending him a message. But that's why the whole Undertaker and Kane thing kind of came off haphazardly. Kane turned on him, you know, for the gazillionth time, and it was all done kind of last minute. And then Taker ripped his mask off at the end of the match, and Kane ran away, and that was the end of that. Corey from New Jersey, Rikishi and Too Cool were so unfathomably over in 2000 that it's crazy to think about. Then WWE turned Rikishi heel, and he became the guy that ran over Steve Austin and was never the same again. Did Rikishi's heel turn ruin his career? And can you name another time where this bad of a heel turn ruined somebody as bad as this? Yeah, it did. The babyface act, I think, only could have gone on for so long, but I think they still had a lot of mileage left, and they cut it off. I know Rikishi has said that he was not a fan of the idea, even though he was, you know, basically they were trying to make him into a main eventer. He was not happy about doing the turn. I mean, it killed his momentum. You know, he had a good thing going, and it killed his momentum. And you would think, again, they turned him heel so he could feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin. But Austin slaughtered him in that first match. It was just a grade-A ass-whooping. So what good did that really do him? You know, he took that sick bump off the Hell in a Cell from The Undertaker, and name one thing of any significance that he did after that. Okay, The Rock buried Vince McMahon's face in his crack. That's about it. I can't think of anything else. I mean, one of the most memorable things I ever saw on a WWE pay-per-view that never gets talked about, and it should, is Rikishi doing that dive off the cage against Val Venus. I mean, that's a legit 400-pound man, 15 feet up. Nothing to hold on to, no net. He's inching over and over and over to the middle of the cage. My heart was in my throat just watching it. And then he comes off with the big splash. That's a highlight reel moment that you really never see. How he didn't win the match with that move, I'll never know. It's Fully Loaded 2000 on the network, in case anybody wants to find it. That guy was over as a babyface, big time. And a few months later, I did it for The Rock. I did it for The Rock. I mean, what a mistake. What a mistake that was. Not to mention the fact that that was just a huge disappointment as far as a payoff goes. As far as other heel turns that ruin guys as bad, you know, I would put Stone Cold on that list. Not that it ruined him the way it did Rikishi, but I don't think people really fully understand how many fans that heel turn drove away from wrestling that never came back. So that's why I would put Austin on that list. And I'd say Goldberg in WCW was another one. That heel turn didn't do him any favors. Matt from Massapequa. I was in Massapequa just the other day. What was the reasoning behind WWE unifying the Intercontinental Championship with the World Heavyweight Championship back in 2002? It's always puzzled me why they did this, given that they already had unified the European and Hardcore titles with the Intercontinental, which left Raw with no secondary belts for 7 months. Was it just to give Triple H yet another accolade, or was there some logistical, I'm going all TNA here, logical, not logistical, reason for that? I'm sick. Cut me some slack. They wanted to make that world title mean more. That's the answer to the question. It was Triple H's belt. He got it handed to him out of a briefcase, so it didn't really have a lot of value at first. And the idea was, let's consolidate all the titles into that world title and make the champion look stronger. I think after a while, they realized that he had decimated the entire Raw roster, and they had to bring that belt back just to have something for the other guys to go after. You know, that whole period is, I've said before, one of my least favorite periods in Raw history, at least until now. Mark from Port Pirie, South Australia. Buy or sell? You may prefer to sell on both, but I'll put it to you anyway. The Eric Bischoff HLA angle or Trish Stratus barking like a dog for Vince McMahon? Yeah, I didn't like either one of those angles. You know, the HLA one, one of the women got her ribs broken by Jamal, I think it was. The Trish thing was just embarrassing. I guess the object was to make Vince out to be an even bigger villain. He was already a big villain. I mean, you know, you didn't have to do that. It was just one of those moments where if somebody would have walked in on me watching that, I would have had no explanation for it. That being said, I have to buy on the Trish angle and sell on the HLA angle, since I have to pick one anyway. I'm buying the Trish one, I'm selling the HLA. The only reason I'm buying the Trish segment was because Paul Heyman, this was his very first night, by the way, on commentary when he joined WWE. His very first night, they were in DC, and he had one of the greatest lines ever, as Vince McMahon is forcing Trish Stratus to strip off more and more of her clothing. Heyman busted out the only worthwhile thing about this entire segment.
Hey, Mom! I came to Washington, D.C., and I'm going to get to see Bush!
Marcus from Berlin, buy or sell WCW Slamboree 2000 or ECW December to Dismember? I'm going to buy on Slamboree and sell on the ECW show. At least Slamboree had some decent matches. I couldn't remember what they all were off the top of my head, so I looked it up and it helped jog my memory. They also at least had some real stars on that show. December to Dismember, I said it before in the other mailbag question earlier, because this is ironically the second December to Dismember question I've gotten this week. But I said it before, one of the worst pay-per-views of all time, ever. They had all of one or two matches announced in advance. Otherwise, the card was a mystery. You look at the final card, and it would barely pass as an episode of Main Event today. It was the show that broke Paul Heyman, and we didn't see him again for 6 years. You know, putting that title on CM Punk and making a new star would have been the much better way to go in that main event. And Vince McMahon said no. He wanted Mr. Muscles, and Vince always gets his way. So the end result speaks for itself. The fact that people paid money to see that show is a travesty. Everybody should have gotten refunds, including the live crowd. They should have been embarrassed that that show ever made the air. Spencer, from Toronto, buy or sell. Chris Benoit's WrestleMania 20 moment or Daniel Bryan's WrestleMania 30 moment? Which was bigger? And ignoring the tragedies with Eddie and Chris, who would have left a bigger impact? That's a loaded one. Who would have left the bigger impact on the wrestling business, if that's what you're talking about? Benoit, for sure. I think Benoit was widely considered the best wrestler in the world for many years. I guess Bryan was too, but on a somewhat smaller scale. But Benoit had so much respect. Bryan has respect too, but not like Benoit. Benoit was so well respected by everybody. I think he'd be the respected elder statesman of the company right now if he were still around. He would be training the next generation. I think the mark he would have left would have been bigger. He also, you know, let us not forget, you know, Benoit came before Bryan. The two were similar in very many ways. But Benoit was on people's radars in the mid-90s, as small as he was, and he was a smaller guy. He was in pretty high demand. And he was one of those guys, not the only one, but he was one of those guys, I think, that kind of opened people's eyes to the fact that, okay, yes, this guy is smaller, but the guy's a wrestling machine. You know, this guy is somebody that we want to have. And I think in some ways you could argue that Benoit kind of cleared a path that guys like Daniel Bryan would eventually go down, because Bryan also was a smaller guy who maybe was cast off by some people, but just by virtue of how good he was just a great pro wrestler. He opened a lot of eyes. And maybe it was a little bit easier for a Daniel Bryan to get over because of people like Chris Benoit who came before him. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a reach, maybe, but I don't think it's too much of one. I don't think it's too much of a leap to say that. As far as Mania moments go, I'm tempted to say Bryan because that win was the culmination of months and months and months of fan support. You know, they started a movement to get that guy into the WrestleMania main event. And once CM Punk left, that was the opening to slot him in there. Without the fan support, they don't go with Daniel Bryan in that spot. You know, Benoit was popular, but he wasn't as popular at his peak as Daniel Bryan was at his peak. I mean, no way. The crowds were not going apeshit for Chris Benoit the way they did for Daniel Bryan. And in a lot of ways, their stories are similar. You know, great wrestlers who at various points were told they were too small and too boring to be the guy. They were not the first choices of management in that role. It was highly unlikely that you would ever see Chris Benoit tapping out Triple H to win the world title in the main event of a WrestleMania. And it was even less likely that you would see Daniel Bryan pinning Triple H in the opening match and then tapping out Batista to end the show to win the world title. I mean, who could have imagined that? Benoit had a fairly short run. He dropped the title at SummerSlam. Bryan had even less of an eventful run with the title. Had he not gotten hurt, the plan was for him to be destroyed by Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, not John Cena. So he, like Benoit, also would have dropped the title at SummerSlam. Like I said, I'm tempted to say Daniel Bryan because of the fan support and because I love that triple threat match in New Orleans. But I'm going to buy on Chris Benoit. I'm going to buy on Benoit and his moment at MSG. That was a very special moment on the 20th anniversary show, or what they call the 20th anniversary show, to have Chris Benoit standing tall as the world champion and then to embrace his best friend Eddie Guerrero, who was also the WWE champion, to see those two guys who nobody ever thought they would see wrestling main events, I don't think. All the crap they had to go through, standing there hugging and crying, confetti falling, that was a special moment. It's depressing as all hell to watch it back now. But as far as a bigger moment, it's got to be Chris and Eddie at WrestleMania 20. So I'm buying on that and I'm selling on Daniel Bryan. We're going to have to wrap things up here because I don't feel good. So if you have questions for the mailbag, keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Again, please include your name and where you are from when you write in. You can check out the Survivor Series Sound Off Extra on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolemonster. Please subscribe to the channel when you are there. We just passed 16,000, so thank you for that. If you want to take advantage in these final hours of our Black Friday sale on prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff, you can do so until Monday at noon Eastern. Just make sure you include the promo code Black Friday at checkout, and you can get 20% off all Sound Off shirts. So take advantage of that. If you want to make a PayPal donation, as always, you can do so on thesolemonster.com. And that's all I got. We will be back. Hopefully I'll be feeling much better next weekend for episode 412. So until then, be well, stay safe. I'm going to go take a nap. I'll see you guys next week. Take care.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan's WCW contract splattered all over the internet. He got a $2 million signing bonus, 25% of the ticket revenue from all Nitro and Thunder events that he appeared on. He also got $20,000 per month for as long as he was part of the NWO, 50% of the profits from any Hulk Hogan merchandise that was sold, and a minimum $675,000 for any pay-per-view he appeared on. You know what I say? I say good for him. If I could get that kind of deal for myself, if somebody wanted me that badly, they were that stupid, then great. Always ask for what you feel you're worth. Your boss should have the guts to say no. WCW wanted to blow this guy so badly, they put a towel down on the floor so they wouldn't get rug burned.
Solemonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.